This is the Division 2, Division 3 podcast.
Welcome to a very special edition of the Inside Lacrosse Division 3 podcast. It is Friday morning, approximately 9:30 a.m. Josh Davey leading this one. Matt Kinnear is running things outside in the IL office for the IMLCA convention this weekend. We are very fortunate to have three special, very special people to me personally in my own lacrosse career and life in general. We have head coach of York College, Brandon Childs, the University of Lynchburg coach, which is still odd to say, Coach Steve Kadelka, and the Elizabethtown College coach, Chris Przinski. We're going to dive into some Division III action. You guys are all here for the IMLCA convention, so appreciate your guys' time. I know there's a lot going on. So first, let's talk about each of your teams specifically. Coach Childs, we can start with you. What is sort of the York College storyline? What are the things that you're excited about heading into the 2019 spring?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing that jumps out is replacing a pretty good midfield group. We had three seniors on our first midfield line that are no longer with us, unfortunately. So we have to replace that midfield. And it was a lot of fun in the fall working some new pieces in the mix. So that's probably the storyline. And then we had an ACL tear last year, so we're looking to get Brendan McGrath back at attack this year and excited to see, his progress coming off of surgery and rehab and those things.
Also, man, it's cool as all three of your guys' teams made the NCAA tournament last year. Coach Kadelka, what are the things that you're really looking forward to, some of the storylines for the Hornets this year?
Yeah, I think for us it's going to start with our senior leadership. I think we have an outstanding group of seniors who have played in some big games, have won some conference championships now, and I think we had a great fall. We built off of kind of a strong finish to last year. We did not start the way we wanted to, and so that's kind of been the focal point throughout fall ball, was to put ourselves in a position when we come back in January to kind of hit the ground running. And we play an extremely tough schedule, so we can't really stay asleep too long. But the guys had a great fall, and we were kind of excited to build off of that.
Coach Przinski, what's going on with the Blue Jays?
I'm very excited and optimistic. Again, like Coach Kadelka said, we have a very strong senior class, 12 young men that have been with me since their sophomore year and my third year at Elizabethtown. It's pretty unique and special for me that over half the team, our young men have recruited, and then the top of our senior leadership are guys that have we've really grown together as I've grown as a head coach, and we've now are looking for the next door to kick down, and that's after winning our first NCAA tournament game last year. Non-complacency and a little chip on the shoulder, so hopefully what they're thinking about, because that's what their head coach is. So
I love it. So we're going to start this, continue to build off that and start small and then sort of expand. So trying to keep it in the smaller aspect and thinking about it. Who are some of the players this year? We'll maybe go reverse. Coach Przinski, start with you. Who are some of the guys that you think could be in the running for Division III Player of the Year? Some of them could be on any of your guys' teams or across the country. Who are some players that you think are, making Division III, continue to be talked about and an exciting product on the field?
That is a tough one for me to answer, Josh. We don't play any of the North teams, and I just, watching some of their films that we have access, I just thought, wow, that guy's pretty good. I don't really look further than that. One thing that I think is unique that coming out of some of our meetings yesterday, bringing the IMLCA portion to this, is there's been 97 teams added since 2008. Now, I finished my playing career in 2008. Division III has added 97 teams. And there's some unbelievable talent in every corner, and we're all South teams, and we could talk about the lefty attack bin and the ODAC, or a couple of them there, or the Sum and the CAC that are always putting up points. But that many programs having talent from everywhere, I'm not going to give you a name, because I think there's a lot out there, but it's pretty cool to see the growth.
That's fair. And then maybe Coach Childs or Coach Kadelka, maybe someone on your own team or someone in your conference that you guys have seen a lot. We talk a lot about the Witherell kid from Washington Lee. He's in our face-off yearbook that's being released this week. He's a preseason sort of player in the year candidate. What do you see from him?
No doubt. I mean, he is as talented as they come, and we get to play him one more time, maybe twice. He's one of those kids that, I think when you talk about the best players in the country, those are kids that when you sit down on a Monday and you're playing them on Saturday, as a coaching staff, you definitely have to take time to try to figure out, what's the best way to contain them. I don't think you're ever going to stop those kids because they're going to get their points. And AJ is a fantastic player for WNL. And I was actually joking with Coach McKay. I'm like, you know, I'd be more than happy to drive over the mountain and pack his bags for him whenever he's ready to leave. I told him last year actually he was going to leave early for the pros. So, but he's a great player, and you know, and I think that's the beauty of our conference. There's some really good talent to put. We think we have some outstanding attackmen as well. So this is kind of the fun part about playing, you know, really good teams. You get to compete against great kids who have a competitive spirit, you know, and that's the fun part about it.
Yeah, I think from the north, we actually went up and played a bunch of games in the north bracket last year, so I got to see some of those teams. And I think the storyline might be on the defensive end, because for a while there, that Salisbury group with Tucker and Nowesnik kind of had a stranglehold on the top defenders in the league. And we had a kid who was kind of repeatedly on those lists as well, that now those three guys have all graduated, and I think it opens the door for some pretty good defenders. I think the kid Wyckoff at Gettysburg is great. I think Coach Brzezinski's being modest. I think he's got a great one in the Klippel kid. The Maruna kid up at RIT is a great player. So I think there's some defenders that kind of have been waiting in the wings a little bit that are going to really make a name for themselves in Division III, and some in the north that kind of in particular. But and then you kind of have the usual suspects. I think Amherst's attack is great. I think Wolf and Minikis are both really, really good players there. The Tufts kids are great. And, watching some Wesleyan film online, the Jacoby kid on their lefty, who I think was just a freshman last year, he was really impressive. So there's a lot of names that come to mind for me that some that are on our schedule that got me losing sleep, and some that I'm, you know, thinking that I wasn't dumb enough to schedule those teams too. So it'll be a fun year for sure, and it's going to be fun seeing who emerges along the way.
Coach P, you mentioned the IMLCA convention, which is the reason why you guys are here. You, all three of you guys are in different stages of your coaching career. Coach Brzezinski, this is your third year, correct, at Elizabethtown, mm-hmm. As Division III head coach. Coach Velka, you're going on your 20...
It's my fifth year, I think, at Lynchburg. This is my 23rd season there.
And then Coach Childs, as a head coach, you've been a head coach from Eastern and...
Yeah, I think 10 years as a head coach, 7 of them at York, eighth year at York.
So from the IMLCA convention standpoint, what are the goals when you guys come up here? You obviously have your coaching staffs with you. What are some of the things that you really look forward to this weekend, other than coming to see me at the Inside Lacrosse offices? But what are the things that you guys really get out of this weekend and you look forward to about, you know, this first weekend in December?
Yeah, I think what's neat about it is just the camaraderie. I think despite the fact that, you know, you just get to spend so much time with people that you wouldn't otherwise see. We get so busy in the spring. And then we see each other when we're out on the road recruiting. But when we're out on the road recruiting, you got to stay true to why you're there, you know. And so sometimes you got to cut conversation short because you got a field to get to. Down here at this convention, it's just one conversation leads to the next. It leads to the next. And we really do all convene here for the good of the game. And so there's some conversations that are happening behind the scenes that then 2 or 3 years later are now – big ticket topics that we're talking about that all kind of originated just two people having a conversation at this thing. And so it kind of rekindles a lot of friendships where maybe you don't get to see each other a lot during the season, and this is our one opportunity to kind of talk about the thing that we love the most for the good of what we love the most.
Yeah, I think, you know, building off a little bit of the conversations that took place last night, you know, we had the NCAA rules video, you know, and so that was I think everybody went into that room with some, you know, interesting thoughts and opinions, and how is this going to go? And I think that's the evolution of our sport. You know, we're entering a brand new era. We have a shot clock this year. We're bringing. I was actually asking some of my former players and the other coaches, like, have you ever played in a game where the dive has been legal? You know, and I guess I'm showing my age here a little bit, but I never played in a game where the dive was not legal. So there's some new things happening in our sport, and it's going to be really exciting. I think the committee did a great job of introducing some new parts, and so I think you come to this convention, especially this year, to kind of talk to some people about those topics and hear and understand and listen to what they experimented with in fall ball and what they like, what they didn't like, and we all have our trusted people that we go to for ask those questions, and that's the beauty of it, is a kind of time to give and receive some great information from everybody.
Yeah, this year, having clarity with the new rules, you know, we've talked about the rules in the past, was a takeaway that I wanted to have, and I think last night answers some questions, raises a couple of questions, but there's more questions than answers at the end of, answers to the questions at the end of the day. But to your point about coming back, and that agenda from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. is action-packed with stuff to do. But I think what I enjoy the most about this is those meetings that you have in between with grabbing a couple colleagues or former colleagues and teammates or former coaches that you coached with, scheduling a lunch together and going over something to for your own little professional development. There's so much education from the 70 speakers, but also the stuff that happens off the schedule that really is instrumental for was for me as a young assistant and stuff that we still implement now as a head coach.
It's funny, you guys all mentioned the shot clock, and I want to dive into that and the dive and some other the new rules. I remember being with you, Coach Brzezinski, in the car on the way to Andrew Wilfong's wedding the day that the rules were announced. We were driving from Chicago to Janesville, Wisconsin, and we, along with some other coaches, and we were just talking for, you know, hours at length about the shot clock. And I'm interested, Coach, you're specifically just, you know, being sort of the most tenured coach in the room, and also from a goalie's perspective, what are your guys' each thoughts on the shot clock? What were your initial reactions when the new rule changes came out? Obviously, they changed a bit, you know, a few weeks later, but what were your initial reactions? How much does the game actually change with, you know, let's start with the shot clock specifically. How much does that change, you know, the way you play? Does it make the better teams better? Does it make the worst teams, if they continue to struggle? What, I mean, that's a loaded question, but what sort of the dynamic? How do you think it changes?
Well, I think I have to eat a couple words, because when it came out, I was like, wow, like this is so drastic of a change. 2018, the brand of lacrosse I thought was pretty good out there, and we discussed that previously on this podcast. And we went into it in the fall. We said we're going to learn this new game, not going to go with every hypothetical or what if is out there. Let's play the game under the new rules, see what it looks like. And we had three different inter-squad scrimmages or alumni scrimmages where I paid officials to, you know, just make sure we were trying to do this the right way, and it ended up being pretty fun. You know, I think the players enjoyed it. I'm on the side. It could be a pretty good thing, you know, if it plays out as it did in our window of a fall ball. And I don't really know if the rich are going to get richer, as you kind of alluded to. I just think that you have to be willing just to coach the sport at the end of the day with the athletes that you got to where they're going to be the best fit. And don't dictate your game plan by a new set of rules with all these what ifs. And we went to that mindset, thought it was a rewarding fall for our guys as we learned. But we shall see. You know, that's coming around the corner soon.
Yeah, change. I think change is hard, you know. And I think the one thing that I kept on coming back to when it was getting to be that late July, early August part was I remember watching, you know, growing up watching a lot of basketball, and I remember at one year in the NCAA they allowed a 3-point line. If you watch the 30 for 30 of the year that NC State wins the championship, all the ACC games that year had a 3-point line that was actually inside the. It was like 16 feet. It wasn't that far. And then when they went to the NCAA tournament, it didn't exist. And so I think, you know, we would look at that now and be like, that's crazy. Like, imagine if we had a 2-point shot during the season, they went to the NCAA tournament, didn't have one. So I think, to me, I think what's awesome about that rules committee is just the forward thinking, right? I mean, we all like our sport. There's no doubt about it. We love our sport. And so I think we all want what's best for it. And sometimes that change and going to a new model, whether it's 80-second shot clock, is it 80, is it 60? And I think they did a great job. What I think was – I was actually with Lars Tiffany right after that in early September, and there was a lot of feedback coming back. And I think they did it right. They listened to the feedback. They let it marinate for about a month. And then they came back and they put probably a better – rule in or interpretation of the rules. So I give that committee and I give the NCAA a ton of credit for that. And I think we're going to evolve the sport. And like Coach Brzezinski said, I mean, we don't know how it's going to end up. You know, no one does. And that's the beauty of it. And that's kind of what makes but I think it's more fan-friendly. It's TV-friendly. You don't have to. No one has to explain what's happening, why the officials have their arms up. I think it's great for the officials. So I'm excited for the change that's happened.
As far as I go, I've always tried to look at the new rules through the lens of my children as opposed to as a lacrosse coach. Because as a coach, you have your own style, you have your own identity, and it's really, really hard with change to look outside the lens of what's best for your program. And so I always tried to look at it through the lens of my own children and what would they enjoy. And so for that reason, I was in favor of the shot clock to just eliminate all that idle time. And even last night when they showed the rules video, in order to demonstrate to us coaches the clock, they had this ginormous clock in the upper left-hand screen of the video, and I loved it. It was like, as a viewer, it just showed you, in a weird way, almost what the players have to be thinking about because of the urgency of the next decision, because there's a clock ticking down. If I have one suggestion for ESPN, it would be to adopt the ginormous clock on the television screen that the rules committee did. And it just made it so, as Coach said, fan-friendly, that if you're having a cookout on Memorial Day weekend and you're a lacrosse guy but you have a bunch of buddies over that don't know what lacrosse is and the game's on in the background, it's a much more inviting game with all like that idle time out of it. As it relates to York lacrosse and us using it, I don't think at York we have a true identity. I don't think we play fast. I don't think we play slow. If anything, I want, as the head coach of York, our identity to be to win the game. And so we're willing to adapt and change in order to win the game. But we've gotten a little bit of a reputation of being kind of disciplined and being kind of patient. And it just makes us get to what we want to do quicker. It's not making us play faster. It's making us play more efficient with our timing. And that's a good thing. I think it's made us better. And I think there originally, because we have a reputation of being a little bit more disciplined or slow, maybe even myself may have thought it would have affected us. I think it actually made us better, not worse, personally. So I think the other rules that brought in were the ones that were a little bit. I think the shot clock, everybody thought, wow, this was pretty good. Some of the other things that go with it are going to take some time to figure out.
And one of those being the dive. And Coach Charles, we've talked about how, you know, in the past, you know, if the shot clock's running out or the timer on, maybe you just roll the ball in the corner. Now you have the option to maybe give it to your best attackman and let him dive through the crease to, you know, create some offense. Coach Kadelka, from your standpoint as a goalie, is that, I mean, I can guess that you probably love that, someone coming into your crease and having the opportunity to get physical with them. But as a goalie, is that something that is, you know, from a defensive standpoint, how does that change anything on the defensive end, the way you guys play, especially towards the end of that shot clock?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to play itself out a little bit. We had a little conversation last night after the rules video, and I thought that Tom Abbott did a great job of explaining, differentiating between an illegal dive, which is diving towards what they're going to call the goal mouth, where the goalie kind of stands to make his saves, versus diving away. The one that probably most – they showed it on the video last night when the – I think it was the Denver player a couple years ago was kind of carried a goal line and kind of dove behind the goal and shot and scored at the end of the game, and obviously was nullified because he landed in the crease. That goal would now count. And that's a great goal. I mean, if you watch it in slow motion, I think he has to like cross-hand it and some really interesting things that young man does with the ball there to score. And now that game goes to overtime, and who knows what happens. So, you know, I think they did a good job explaining it, and I think, you know, we have players that never dove for a goal legally, and so we might not have anyone dive for the goal, you know. So who knows what's going to happen with it, I think. But now you have the opportunity to do that if you can, and maybe at the end of the shot clock it might change it a little bit, but we'll see.
I want to get into a little bit of just like Division III from a broader landscape. You guys have all obviously, you know, played Division III, coached Division III for a long time. What is something for people who who want to listen and know more about D3? I tweeted something yesterday and retweeted it from Inside Lacrosse, and I got like 8 or 9 comments of people just asking questions about Division III and your guys' roles. And a lot of it was about recruiting, so we can dive into that a little bit as well. And where people can get seen specifically, whether it's a prospect day or what events you're going to. And I know a lot of that is subjective. People are going to different events based, you know, geographically where they're going, what teams are going, stuff like that. If you're speaking to a recruit and they say, hey, Coach Brzezinski, you know, I want to play at Elizabethtown College, what are the things that you're looking for in a player? And then again, this is going to be a really general question, and I apologize, but maybe my better question is, what's your elevator pitch for Elizabethtown College, and what is your, what are you looking for when you're going to these events?
Which one do you want me to answer
first? Hit me with elevator pitch, because I want to put you on the spot.
Well, I think that if you choose to come to Elizabethtown, you're probably a self-starter. You're probably intrinsically motivated. You probably don't need your mom to pull you out of bed, you know, to get your teeth brushed to get to the class on time. And then you probably also do something like you bus tables, you know, you volunteer. And then that's kind of what I look for in the recruiting process. I've said this, and it probably could be disagreed with, and I understand the arguments. I really don't have an interest of recruiting the best 16-year-old lacrosse player that's out there in the country. That guy at the age of 16 could be that way because he was just born that way. He hit his growth spurt first. He had access to the highest amenities of coaching and resources from inception. Okay, I want to find the guy that has the most things in his cupboard from an early age. You know, Eagle Scout, I love to hear that. I love to hear, like, work a side job. I love that I have 18 brothers and sisters. You know, just different things that when now we are in a locker room of comparable or equal talent, what do you have to fall back on when there's times of adversity? Because we're not going to go undefeated in your 4 years at Elizabethtown, okay? We're going to have a loss. You might be challenged for a starting position. You might be asked to lift weights, you know, after practice. So what do you have, like, in you from a young age that you're going to fall back on when the going gets tough? So there's your both right there.
Coach Kadaka, you want to give me the University of Lynchburg?
That's a tough one. That's a tough act. If I'm ready to run through the door here for Coach Brzezinski. But I think, you know, for us, it's always been, at least for me in recruiting, when you go to these events and you watch kids play, it's trying to – you obviously want to recruit talented kids, but you want to recruit kids who love to play the game. I mean, I think you know, you go to some of these events and you still love to go to, like, the early morning games or the last games of the day and just see who's still playing. You know, who's still celebrating after scoring goals, who's still diving on the end line to get a ball, whose uniform's the dirtiest. I mean, those are some of the things that those are weird things to look at, but they stand out, you know, and those kids, more times than not, are the kids who are going to be the most successful. And you know, for us, that's kind of been what we've looked for, and then obviously, you know, make sure that fit is proper for them academically and all the other, you know, other recruiting pieces that go into it. But there's all those little pieces or the little things, right? And you guys have heard me say that a ton of times. But to me, when you're on the road recruiting, I think those are the things you're trying to look for. And then you have a system, right? We all have systems that we play, like Coach Childs was alluding to his, and so you're kind of looking to see. We all could be sitting at a field in a chair and watching kids play, and you're going, the coach next to you, we all might view that kid extremely differently just because of the style that we play, and that's the beauty of it. You know, I'm old enough now where, to me, when we're recruiting, it's like we're going to get the number that we want to get, and it's just about the fit. You know, you want the fit for us and the fit for that young man. And as long as you can, if that marriage is perfect, that's when it works the best. And so I think now at the point where, like, if kids say, you know, coach, I'm looking at another school, I'm okay with that because the fit is not there. You know, you can't put a square peg into a round hole. So, but the initial part of it is the fun part. That's the beauty of why you get up in the morning to go recruit is to kind of watch those kids play, because it's a special game. It's meant to be played a special way, and I think we all feel that. And trying to find those kids that you'll be coaching 5 years later, potentially for, like, a conference championship or a national championship, that makes it, you know, makes it a lot of fun.
Looking at you, York College, Coach Childs.
Yeah, so at York, what I try to do in the recruiting process, once taking it, I guess, once they're in my office as opposed to identifying them on the field, and a lot of identifying on the field is going to go into what we talk about in the office, but we really spend a lot of time on three things, the first of which, and I've defined it when I speak to families, is recruiting my kind of guy. At one point, this happened, I said, you know, I want to recruit a great guy, and then I quickly corrected the sentence to just my kind of guy, because I think ultimately what I end up doing is I coach my guys very similar to how my parents raised me. And so if I recruit people with kind of the same moral compass as my parents raised me, then it allows for me to coach them very genuine and authentically, and I think this generation responds to those two things. And so that's really important. And so I spent a long time explaining what my kind of guy is, which is exactly what Coach P just did. He explained who his kind of guy was. And if my son is wired that way, I'm going to want him to play for Coach P. And it's all out on the table. Like, this is how you're going to get coached. And so I explained, you know, this is my kind of guy. And it's either for a family or not. And as Coach said, if it's not for them and it's not the right fit, then that visit was worth their time, because then they move on, right? So that's really important. The next thing I talk to families about is growth potential. I think this is one of the beauties of being a Division III coach, and I can't speak for every Division III coach, and maybe this comment will come back to bite me in the future, but there aren't too many Division III coaches losing jobs because of losing games. And it allows for us kind of the freedom to take some chances in the recruiting process to growth potential. As Chris said, he doesn't recruit the 15 best players. What he recruits is the 15 players who have the highest growth potential. And so you have to explain to a kid your plan and your vision for them to fulfill that growth potential in the recruiting process. And if you do that and they're excited about that plan, and it may mean telling a kid, I think this is the beauty of Andy Shea at Yale. It may mean being really honest with a kid and saying, you're not good enough right now as a junior in high school to help us win the national championship. And so I'm recruiting you for that exact reason, to make you good enough as a junior in college to help us win the national championship. And it will take a humble kid to hear that and then want to go be a part of that. But that's the kid that ends up winning you championships. And in Division III, we don't have to take the finished product. Quite frankly, we can't. The finished product's already been taken by the level ahead of us. And so we get that unfinished product, and we can take some chances based on their character or their summer job and those things, and really kind of build your program and recruit to your culture as opposed to just your style of play. And then alignment's so important, making sure that not only is the college the right fit, but is that kid the right fit with the other kids in your program. That's really, really important. And so the feedback you get from the players on your team about a kid and a family who visited is really important. If a kid visits and my players at York tell me, Coach, I don't think he's the right fit, we will stop recruiting that kid. That's really important as well.
So based on some of the questions that were asked previously, reverse engineering a little bit. If I'm a defenseman and I go to Hereford High School, and I know I'm not a Division I player, I want to play Division III lacrosse, what is the best way to get seen? I know we're talking about an event that you guys all have stake in and are really excited about, and it kind of reminds me of an old school event that's pretty cool, so we'll talk about that in a little bit. But if I'm a defenseman at Hereford High School, Coach Brzezinski, how do I find out about Elizabethtown College? What's the best way to get in touch with you, find out more about your program? What is, I don't know where I want to go. I don't know where necessarily. Maybe I'm an engineering major. I know that's a big thing in Elizabethtown. Other than the academic side, how do I find out about Elizabethtown College? What is that process? If parents are asking, this is what you need to do to find out what the schools you want to get into, what does that process look like?
I think there's two drivers in this process. The first is in the seat of the family, of the young man. Okay, and do you want to go to a small school down south that has business? There, you've now cut off half of the places that you're going south instead of north. You know, we're small versus big. Academic fit. And then you, in the driver's seat, start to look at those institutions. Back in the day, when I got to hear about Lynchburg in 2002, you know, they were from like hand pamphlets that sat on the coffee table, you know, and you just had to go to the guidance counselor's office and get all those. Now, everybody has a phone or iPad that you can start that search and get pretty far in it, and right fit, wrong fit academically and whatnot. And I think, and I say that to every young man that sits in my office, that there's a criteria exclusive to you that you're going to find a place where you're going to be happy. Well, cross is part of that criteria. Size, academics, location, male to female ratio, I don't know. Like, there's something that, like, extremely but exclusive to that young man. And then there's the lacrosse recruiting side of it. And this is the other thing that we always end in a recruiting meeting with a young man that visits Elizabethtown. Let this game of lacrosse open doors for you. And some of those doors you might have never knew existed. I thought Lynchburg, Virginia was, I thought Lynchburg College was in Tennessee when I first got a letter in the mail. Found out it's Virginia. Then I go, and then when, by playing in that showcase, by playing at Top Star back in the day, being coached by Brandon Childs, that's how far back it goes a little bit. I got a letter from this place. Now it's gonna open the door for me to do my own research on it. And those doors that could be open up could lead to, you know, where you make your best friends, you know, where you get your diploma. As I just said, there's 97 new Division III institutions since I graduated school. You go and play and you get an email from them. It's free to open up the email, and that is your return on investment from the paying to go to that event. So look at it, because it might have all those things that you're looking for. So there's two ways. Know who you want, have an idea of what you want, have a search, but then when the stuff starts coming in, don't shoot things away, because you never know. You never could open something for you that could be life-changing.
Anything else you want to build on that, Coach? I think Coach Brzezinski hit the nail on the head there.
I do think it's really important that Coach Brzezinski said that Brandon Childs managed to open doors for him. And if you are listening to this podcast, if Brandon Childs can open doors for Chris Brzezinski, imagine what he could do for you. So it'd be hard for me not to mention that.
And I, there's a guy named Joe Madden.
And I can easily attest to the fact that Coach Brzezinski did his homework. You know, I remember, I think we had just had Holly. Holly was born, and I remember the constantly getting calls from Chris Brzezinski. Hey, Coach, how you doing? You know, and it was just like, I'm just trying to put my daughter to bed here. But Chris was extremely active in that, and I think that's a big part of it. You know, I think these guys have all alluded to it. It's kind of like we kind of talk about it in the sense of what makes each of our programs unique, right? We all work hard. We all play. We all have good programs. We all win games at times. We lose some at times, and you win a lot of things. But what is the unique part of that? And I think for each student, you know, each student athlete that's looking at schools, they have their own uniqueness to it, to what they want. And my wife, who is a college counselor, not a guidance counselor, she's a college counselor. You know, she is. She talks about that all the time with her students. You know, what is that best fit for them? And it's an awesome process. You know, I think for someone who's 16, 18 years old, and to embrace it is important.
Coach Brzezinski, you mentioned the growth, and this is the last thing I want to touch on before we dive into sort of our last topic, is just the growth of Division III, and growth could be a relative term toward a lot of different things. You know, comparison to Division I, there's, you know, three times as many Division III schools playing lacrosse as there are Division I, so maybe not growth in that way, but growth in terms of getting more eyeballs in the sport, opening up more doors, maybe more scholarship, whether it's academic, obviously athletic, not really an option, but what, you know, for all three of you, maybe we'll start with Coach Childs. I feel like I've put Coach P on the hot seat a little bit. You know, what more, does that come from the IMLCA? What are things that, you know, we can be doing as a, you know, fans of Division III, people who are invested in the sport, to continue to grow the sport, and whatever the grow might mean something different to everyone?
Yeah, I mean, I think Division III, one thing that's unique about Division III is we play more games. I mean, last year we played 22 games, and there's a lot of opportunity to go out and see Division III lacrosse. It gets a little harder with Division I because if they only play on Saturdays and your son's playing on Saturdays or whichever else, it gets challenging, you know. And now with new media outlets, I'm on the board with the USILA, and LSN is getting more involved with the USILA, which will get more involved with Division III. And there's just other outlets out there to be able to watch the game. And I think when people watch the Division III game, they get pretty excited about it. I think we have less time to prepare because we play Saturday, Wednesday, which inevitably puts the decision-making more on the players. It's a little less controlling, and therefore it's a little bit more organic to the same game they're playing. Watching a Division III game and I don't want to, like, there's a lot of great coaches in Division III. It's not as though we're not trying and working hard. But I think the product looks the way the sport is remembered by the people that used to play it back in the day. It looks a little faster. It can be a little sloppier at times. Those four-goal swings that of momentum, I think they happen more often in Division III games than they do. And I mean, the RIT-Wesleyan playoff game last year, I mean, that game ends up like 19-18, and one team, I mean, if that game goes another 30 seconds, we might have a different national champion last year. It just was like, it'd be hard to find a more just thrilling lacrosse game. There were probably better played, maybe even better coached lacrosse games last year. But from an entertainment standpoint, I'd be hard pressed to find a better game than Wesleyan versus RIT in the semifinal. And so what I'm saying is, if that is in your backyard, you're listening to this podcast, and you live in Rochester, New York, go watch RIT lacrosse. You know, and you'll love it. I'm telling you, you'll love it. And I just think that's your opportunity. And like you said, there's more. So if you live in Rochester, your Division I options are a little bit smaller than your Division III options. So why get in the car and drive an hour to go watch a Division I game when there's a great Division III lacrosse 5 minutes from your house?
Yeah, there'll be 36 teams make the NCAA tournament this year for Division III, and you know, which means there's a ratio that the NCAA uses for that formula. And I think we have 241 eligible teams next year with you know, a couple provisionally maybe to be added next year. And, you know, like Coach alluded to earlier, I mean, how many teams have been added since 2008? So there's growth. And what's also happening is what's making our product as good as it is right now, it's probably the best Division III product has ever been, is the amount of kids that are playing it, they're being recruited, and then the parity that exists. I mean, there's, like Brandon was just talking about, in that playoff game, like, you know, both semifinal games were one-goal games. You know, the quarterfinal games were extremely competitive. You know, the second-round games, there was a bunch of overtime games and that. So the landscape of that NCAA tournament could have shifted on a one- or two-goal or two saves or two face-offs or two man-ups, which would have created an incredibly different environment, you know. And so it's there's so many teams close to being at the top that more so than ever. And even I heard Coach Berkman even say that earlier this year on something I was listening with him talking about, is like, you know, the amount of 1-2 goal games now in Division III lacrosse is incredible, and it's awesome. I mean, it makes for a great product, like Coach Childs is saying, and it's exciting, and we don't have as much time because of the format of how we play games, and which is okay. I mean, I think we all, that's why we signed up for, you know. Kids want to play. They don't want to practice. So putting them on the field, let them play is pretty fun.
What I think is special, and it transcends the Roman numeral of Division I, II, or III about the sport of lacrosse, is the beauty of imperfections. So like, I grew up watching football. And my dad, he coached me in football, and you had 11 across the line of scrimmage and then 11 across the line of scrimmage. One was an X and one was an L. And if the pulling guard kicked out and he sealed the strong safety and that guy could go up the A-gap, you probably got 6 to 8 yards on that set play. What I love about our sport is that there is so many plays that make that highlight reel that Coach talked about with the Denver guy, and he cross-hands it in the top right corner, that I don't know. I mean, Coach Brown probably maybe put them in that practice situation for that one moment in time, but a lot of things happen on the field that we don't draw up as an X or an O in practice. But it's the fundamentally sound, it's the people that spend all this little time, like the extra time doing the little things, as Coach Kadelko alluded to. You can make some unbelievable things happen with this sport, whether you're big, tall, slow, fast, with how you manipulate a stick, with how much you hit the weight room, and all these imperfections allow some things of beauty. I remember watching Duke when Jordan Wolfe played, and he's got like three guys banging on him on a ground ball, like close to the sideline. He picks it up, he comes underneath, goal, and that was one of the years they won it. And I just remember reading that like Jordan Wolfe could squat 500 pounds. I don't know how many Duke practices or college lacrosse practices are a 3-on-1 ground ball on the sideline that lead to that picking up and going to the goal. Probably us as coaches, we're taught to pass it twice and go at it out the backside. Jordan Wolfe had a game-sealing play in a national championship game because of all this imperfections and the little things that add up. And I think that's pretty cool. And what we get at the Division III level, because we have limited access to those guys, we really have to thrive in some of those, embrace those imperfections, that not everything Coach Brzezinski says in the pregame practice meeting is going to happen. And that's okay. So, and it's probably a good thing. So, I just think it's pretty cool that those things are going to be highlighted in 2019, especially with new rules and so much uncertainty with the dive. But there's going to be unbelievable things that happen in our sport just because of the imperfections.
That's awesome. You got me fired up. Just to wrap this thing up, you guys are running an event. It's called the Edge Showcase. I will let you sort of let this be your time, Coach Childs, to talk about, you know, what's the, you know, genesis of the event, why you guys are doing it. Tell everyone listening, you know, how they can find out more about it. You know, hit us with it.
Yeah. So obviously the three of us are pretty close, and it's not just the three of us. I think, and I'm not going to speak for the entire college coaches landscape, but our summers are different now than they were, you know, just 4 years ago, let alone 7, 8, 10 years ago. And and every summer when it ends, we end up talking with one another. We're like, man, we just wish there was something different. We wish we could go back to an old school model. And finally, I don't know who it was amongst the three of us, but one of us decided, like, we can either keep talking about this every summer or we can do something to try to do something about it. And that's what we've set out to do. So we've put together this a summer event. It's called the Edge Showcase. It's going to be hosted at York, simply because we're the most centralized location for it. But it'll be at York College. and it's capped at 225 kids. There's no prerequisites. You don't have to be committed. You don't have to be recommended. There's no application process. If you are a kid listening to this podcast and you want to come out from an underdeveloped area and get coached up, this is for you. And so what in I guess its most organic form, what it is it's a camp where you're going to get exposure. There's no doubt about it. We're going to have college coaches there. There is going to be a recruiting element to the camp. However, there's going to be an instructional developmental element to the camp. And so I was thinking about this recruiting process a lot. And what ends up happening in this recruiting process is almost a lot of guarantees. If you go to this event, you're guaranteed to be recruited. If you play on this team, you're guaranteed to be recruited. The fact of the matter is, any recruiting seminar you'll ever go to, someone will say the words, recruiting is an inexact science, which means, therefore, no one can ever guarantee you you're going to get recruited. And so it would be short-sighted to create a recruiting event that you left as a player no better than how you came. And that is what we've tried to set out to do. Now, the second side of this, and this just kind of – this was the light bulb moment for the three of us last week, and some of it is just statistical driven. We can see who's clicking on our website and who's clicking on links. Technology is a beautiful thing. And what we've noticed is there are these people from the West Coast and Georgia and Texas who are really intrigued by the edgeshowcase.com, more so than right here in the Mid-Atlantic. 225 kids is what is capped at. We have 25 college coaches staff to come, 3 professional players, and 3 keynote speakers. So at best, that's 255 people coming together for to develop the game. And we actually had this light bulb moment the other day that's not good enough. We actually had this opportunity. And so we kind of came to agreement that we're going to provide some content between now and as long as this Edge Showcase ever lists, that will go out on our website, out on social media, to help families with the question and answers regarding recruiting process, Division III versus Division I, 7 tips to create the best highlight video for the recruiting process by Steve Kudelka. Here's 7 tips to shooting by Ryan Brown, and start to put that stuff out so that we're providing content at free of charge. And just as you said, when you opened up the question on social media, what do you want to hear about? How many of them were about recruiting? And that's what the people are starving for, because the recruiting process is inexact. And so what we try to do is to create an event where we could maybe hopefully simplify it a little bit. These are the coaches that are coming to work with my son and coach my son, so therefore they're going to recruit them. But even if my son doesn't turn out to be good enough for that program, my son's one step closer to becoming better. And that's what we ultimately tried to do. And I don't know, I probably talked far too long about it. I'll open up to these guys to add their...
No, it's from the coach's perspective, we sit on a lot of sidelines. Those chairs that you see us schlepping around, that's the office, June 1st through August 1st. And there's moments where we're sitting and watching Team A versus Team B where the books are incomplete. And, man, you see a guy playing so hard and you want that opportunity to go work with number 19 out there. And so, you know, we've kind of said, and I'm not going to take the credit for it, but can we get the coach off the sideline and onto the field? Hey, Johnny, sit a little lower. Don't throw that check at goal line. You know, like, and those opportunities. And now, if you want to bring it back to that, not only the educational point, that hopefully that Johnny's a better defenseman, but I've established a relationship, and now we're 5 steps ahead through this whole inexact science of a recruiting process. And, yeah, I remember being a better player leaving some of the events that I went to in the early 2000s that were all being coached by college people. Some of them I didn't get recruited by a Division I school out of some of those, but I know I got better. And at the very least, us getting more involved with the potential people that we could work with 4 or 5 years down the line, I'm really excited to see this, and I think everyone's going to be walking away from the event on July 30th. Exhausted, but better.
Yeah, I think from even the people who are working the event, right? I mean, I think there's something we talked about recently we got, like Brandt, like Coach Child said, 25 coaches and 3 professional guys and 3 guests, you know, guest speakers, you know, Coach Janzik Coach Nadalin and you know, I mean, we got some awesome people that as coaches, like here we are at the convention. We're here to learn. We're here to make ourselves better. Well, from July 28th to July 30th, these coaches are all going to be in the same area. And so when kids might be at the dining hall getting lunch, we're going to be sitting around probably talking. And I remember, I'm old enough now to remember like the Top Star camp. And, at night, coach, it'd be Coach Runk, Coach Jameson. I mean, Coach Runk's getting inducted in the IMLC Hall of Fame this weekend. Coach Jameson, a longtime great coach at Bucknell. And just sitting around like eating pizza with those guys and just at 25 years old, just listening to them tell stories, you need to know that. I mean, these are historical lessons that are awesome for our sport. And so not that we're going to be able to maybe bring back Coach Runk and Coach Jameson to come to that event, but those are people that are fantastic, right? And so those are – for us as coaches to not only just sit on the sideline and evaluate kids playing, now we're actually going to get to talk and to learn and learn other drills. Hey, you're going to teach the 3-on-2 drill today. Well, there might be a new wrinkle that – Coach Berkman will be there, and he might teach it a different way that none of us ever thought about or do. And they're like, "Oh, well, we're going to bring that back to our program." And so those are also the other side takeaways that we'll get as coaches, and the kids, no doubt about it, will if they bring a pad and a pen and write down everything they learned that day, it's going to get filled up. There's no doubt about it.
It's funny you mentioned Top Star, because I remember going with my best friend from high school to Top Star. It's the first time I ever heard about it was Lynchburg College. And you had an index card, and you got to write your GPA and your SAT on it. And I remember seeing this big guy with a big hat and these L socks, and it was Garrett Kern. I was like, who is this goofball? But there's like 900 kids lined up at the Lynchburg College. It was like a science fair, basically. And you had a little, demo, and it had a picture of Schellenberger Field and stuff. And I was like, there's like a bunch of kids in line. You might as well go find out more about it. And I think I gave my last index card to you and Coach Kern. And so I'm really excited that you guys are bringing it back, that sort of old school model, because I think it's something that's certainly needed in the sport. East Coast Eyes is also involved, correct?
Yeah, they're there. We've got a great relationship with them. E-Town alums, there's a E-Town plug there. But every camper's going to get a free stickhead. They're going to be there filming some stuff. And it's cool to be with somebody that really cares about the growth of the sport as well. And while they're kind of young and on the forefront of some things, we're trying to be on the forefront of bringing back something that had a lot of value. And I think they bring value as well, and helping the campers string sticks, all that type of stuff.
I love it. Well, this has been awesome, really special for me. Again, I don't get to do that much editorial stuff, so being able to be in this tiny, we're in a very small room right now, very close together, so I can feel Coach Brzezinski breathing on me a little bit. So this has been really, really cool for me to do, and I appreciate you guys, and you have a busy weekend, so thank you for taking the time and coming by the offices, and excited to, on our end to continue to get to work and shine a brighter light on Division III, so appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Have a great spring.
Thank you.
This is the Division II, Division III podcast.